Your Partner in Success Radio is a free business podcast with host Denise Griffiths. It's all about great stories, conversation, and context to help you move your business and life forward with actionable tips and advice from her guest experts. To listen and subscribe, just find us on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you consume your podcasts.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and today I welcome to the show Marcy T. Rogers. Now, Marcy is the CEO and founder of SpineMark, and she has built her executive career in the healthcare industry through the development of niche surgical centers of excellence, and they're fueled by innovation and clinical research. Marcy is a proven leader, and she has over 30 years of trust and rapport with physicians, hospitals, ambulatory surgery centers, and public and private medical device and pharmaceutical manufacturers. But truly, she's an entrepreneur in spirit, and she has a sincere passion to foster patient satisfaction and accountability through outcomes that are substantiating medical care. Her accomplishments were recently recognized by Comerica Bank at its Women's Business Awards program. I have to say that softly and quietly, that acknowledges women in leadership and tribute to their contributions. And Marcy was honored in the category Women of Business. Now today, she's here to share what I think is really important information. And some of you may be saying, well, what does this have to do with business? Look, we're all at danger for concussions. I'm in danger of a concussion from banging my head on my desk regularly. We're going to be talking about the epidemic of concussions, what parents need to know, protecting seniors when they fall, NFL and concussions, of course, that's very important, and pre-VPRO and Prevacus. So Marcy, welcome. I'm so glad to have you here today.
Denise, it's really my pleasure, and I thank you so much. I'm laughing, though, about you hitting your head on your desk.
Oh, I do it. I actually posted on Facebook some of the things that I've learned as a solopreneur, and one of them is if you're going to smack yourself on the head, do it lightly. So, you know, with a little bit of humor so you don't really hurt yourself. Because as solopreneurs, entrepreneurs, we're always either we're grinding our teeth, banging our head, biting the steering wheel, and I really don't advise that you bite the cat's tail no matter how much he asks for it.
Right. Exactly. Well, you know, desperate times, desperate things, right?
Exactly. But you have to have fun with it, right? So listen, before I start peppering you with questions, because you've got a lot to share here, what do you want people to know about you before we get going?
Oh, I think the most important thing to know about me is, you know, what you highlighted so nicely in the promotion materials too, is that, you know, all of this is driven by a deep-rooted passion that started way back 30 years ago to be a patient advocate and to help patients, children, adults, elderly. And all of this doesn't really stem from a need or a desire for money as much as it was to do something that made a difference in the lives of people that came into my life from my work.
You know, and I'm so glad you said that, because in the years that I've been in business, I have learned, sometimes the hard way, but more often just from paying attention, that when you do something from the heart, when you become a servant leader, so to speak, the money comes. But if you started out going, I'm going to make this much money, and here's my spreadsheet, and I must do this, this, and this, I find that people really struggle if they're not doing it from the heart and from their passion. So I'm so glad you brought that up.
Well, I have to tell you, it's not easy. This is not an easy road for anyone. Being an entrepreneur and trying to do or accomplish breakthroughs and assistance for patients that, you know, no one's really done before. But it's the heart and the passion that fuels the stamina and the always forward movement, no matter how many obstacles you hit. So, you know, it's kind of like you've got to have the attitude that no matter what, I'm going to succeed.
And listen, you and I have had conversations before, and one thing that I noticed about you almost immediately is that you have this huge curiosity about everything and how you can help, you know, people who really need your help. I mean, you just don't give up because it's not out there, it hasn't been out there. You know, nobody's done it yet. You've got this curiosity and this passion to just move forward.
Right. And that's really been the driving force, because being in this field, being in the medical field, it can be very, very controversial. I'm not a doctor. You know, why would I be trying to do all of these things? I mean, shouldn't I just stay in my lane? And I've never been a stay in the lane person, Denise.
I know. Now, let's talk, trust me, I know. So let's talk a bit about this, because you say you're not a doctor, but you are a proven leader, and you're constantly working with physicians, hospitals, surgery centers. How did that come to happen?
Well, it came to happen because, in reality, in 1978, I met one of the pioneers in a field called craniofacial surgery. I had never been thought about the medical field, much less worked in it, but it was just a chance meeting, a chance happening, that I met Dr. Edgerton, and he thought I had great energy. That was really it. And I fell in love with the patients, the children. I walked into the clinic. There were 30 families with these children in their faces that would have just ripped your heart out if it didn't scare you to death. And they became my passion. And so that was how it started, in the University of Virginia with Dr. Edgerton and another pioneer, Dr. John Jane, a neurosurgeon. And together we started that clinic, and I defined myself as a patient coordinator, patient advocate, and that's where it started.
And see, people are going to think I'm a bit nuts, but don't most really great paths happen by accident? You don't just say, I'm going to go here, I'm going to go there. They just happen almost serendipity.
Well, yes, and as I look back over the things that have even led me to where I am today, there was always the moment of, I think this is destiny, you know it.
Mm-hmm.
And you take hold of something, and it's, you know, for me, it was never about economic reasons. It was about helping the patients, whether it be the child and his family and the surgery and preparing for that, making sure everything was done. I mean, I still have patients that I helped get craniofacial surgery in 1978 that still stay in touch with me. You know, it, because we developed a bond, and that bond has lasted for a long time.
Oh, I can well imagine. Now, the only thing I know about craniofacial is from a movie.
Matt,
were you involved in that movie? Yeah, were you? It seems like you were.
No, I wasn't. Well, I saw the movie and I went ballistic, because I was trying to figure out, how do you get past the stigma of a child with a really, really horrible, deformed face, and raise money for a cause that, if they had the opportunity to have surgery and all of that, all of the rehabilitation that would bring, that then they could become normal members of society. So I and particularly the younger children going to school and the bullying and the harassment and the things that they got from their peers. So I saw that movie, and I'm in the midst of, I had just formed a foundation with my former husband to help these children, a nonprofit 501c3. And I said, oh my God, Cher was in this movie. I have got to go talk to Cher. So you'll laugh, Denise. I flew out to L.A. I did not have an appointment with Cher, but I tracked down who her manager was, Billy Sammoth at that time, who's now deceased, but great guy. And I walked into his office, and his assistant said, no, he's not going to see you. You don't have an appointment. I said, well, I couldn't get an appointment, so I flew here. And she said, well, he can't see you. And I said, okay, well, I'm just going to sit in this chair today until he says he's going to see me. And at 5 o'clock, she got sick of looking at me, and I guess he figured that I was not leaving, and he saw me. And that was the beginning of how Cher and I got together, And she was an enormous help to us. She came to Washington. I took the cause with the help of volunteers and others all the way to the White House and Mrs. Bush and the Russian embassy. We were working with the Soviet Children's Fund, and Cher came, and I had 14 families. We testified before Congress. It was an incredible achievement from the beginning of seeing Movie Mass to that. But yes, that's how I was motivated, driven by Mass to go sit in Bill Sammis' office for 6 or 8 hours.
But look what happened. I mean, just seeing
incredible.
A movie, again, serendipity, I'm telling you. You see a movie, you catch on fire, you take action, and here we are. It's amazing.
Right.
I wish more people would do it. Just say, yeah, I'm going to put that on my list for tomorrow. Just go do it. Just do
right.
it. Sometimes it's the best thing you can do.
Right. And it doesn't always work. But, you know,
no.
What happens is, you know, you pick your battles. You try. And if it doesn't work the first time, you try again. But ultimately, at some point, you know, you have to say, well, is it working or not? And move on. But that happened to be a great connection. And when I saw that movie, I actually stood up in the theater and said, oh, my God, this is a mandate for these children to have the surgery they need, because that boy would not have died had he had craniofacial surgery.
And I have to admit, I've never seen the movie. I tried. I couldn't. I've tried a couple of times. I just can't. I wind up clutching my stomach, and at one point I actually got so, I don't know if I was emotionally involved or what was going on, but I remember bending over, clutching my stomach and trying to not throw up. And it wasn't him. It was just the
story
hurt me. It hurt. It really hurt. So well, I've never made it all the way through the movie.
Well, the ending, you're lucky, because if you were clutching your stomach during it, the ending will really make you sad. But that sadness and that lack of awareness and that lack of medical care was what I set out to change, and to take these children from out of the shadows, out of, you know, supposedly being mentally retarded and in homes for the disabled and everything else, and put them right out in the light and front and center. And what really kept me going through this journey was the fact that it wasn't like I had to wait for something to validate what I was doing, because after they had surgery, it was like the most amazing psychological, physical transformation of a human being you've ever seen. They were not walking around with their face down. They were not fearful. They actually started engaging with their peers. And just like the movie Trouble, which had, it was out just recently, this little boy a couple of years ago with Treacher Collins syndromes. Julia Roberts played the mother, and I can't remember, but he overcome everything just by letting them finally see who he was and what he stood for, Augie. And Augie was awarded this big honor, not because he had surgery, but because he never gave up and he didn't let them take away who he was. He overcame it by being a bigger, better person as a 9-year-old.
And see, I'm clutching my stomach again. And that's in a good way. I mean, that's such an amazing story. And, you know, I have to say, when I was a kid, there was a boy in my high school class, and I was probably one of his only friends, largely because I was an introvert, big-time introvert. And people would bully him because he had terrible epilepsy, just terrible. And all of a sudden, he disappeared, and he wound up coming back into school in a wheelchair with basically half of his skull gone. They had gone in and just removed a big old part of his skull. And all of a sudden people wanted to be his friends. Well, God bless him. I was mad at them, but he just said, listen, let me, and he did pass away eventually. I mean, he didn't live too much longer after that. But once the kids started seeing him as a person instead of somebody that they had to walk around, it really changed a lot of people. And I understand what you're saying, because once you start looking at people who are very different from you and actually paying attention to them and understanding or trying to understand what their path is like as opposed to ours, I think you become a better person. So your story is an amazing story.
Well, it was an amazing journey because of them. As I said, a few months ago, I flew to Baltimore because the young child that I had found on ABC World News in 1982, who had a midline facial cleft down the whole center of his face, his name was, he called me Moonlight, and I called him Beethoven because he was had this incredible gift. Even at three, he could play classical music totally, totally by ear. I mean, sitting on the piano on his mother's lap playing, and that's how I found him. So that story and that journey, we got him surgery, and he had a very successful outcome. And about three to six months ago, I was in Baltimore for meetings, and I had dinner with his family and him and his brother. And it was like we were never apart. It was just so great. And, you know, those kinds of moments and those kinds of experiences change you. They fill you up with so much joy for no other reason than they happened.
Exactly. And when you have these moments and you have this history, if you will, I think it probably leads you to do bigger, better, more honorable things, because now you know what you're capable of and how you can help and serve others. And I really wish that many more of us would understand that if you go into life, and this is not a term I love, I have to say, but be a servant leader, you're just a better person. You just have to become a better person by default.
But you have to be observant. So I look at that whole history, and it was very painful for me because of a divorce that I had to turn that work over and move on. And I actually got Cher to take over the foundation because in this crazy divorce I was going through, I couldn't damage it because of the fighting going on between my former husband and myself. So I called Cher and I said, please take this over because I don't want to damage it. I worked too hard. And she did. And today she's still involved. But, you know, that was painful. But then all of a sudden, that experience is what prepared me, has guided me through all the things I'm trying to do for concussions and traumatic brain injuries. Because the same kind of awareness, the same kind of work, the same kind of attention needs to be paid. But there are thousands of people, thousands and thousands, suffering from traumatic brain injuries of all ages that have no treatment, nowhere that they know to go. The treatment for it's archaic as we know it, sit in a room, lower the shades, and rest. And so that, you know, it's interesting, that whole experience with craniofacial really was the foundation for what I'm trying to do now in the area of concussions.
And that was a perfect segue, because my next question was going to be, how did you go from that to, you know, us talking about the epidemic of concussions? I mean, I knew that one of my very dearest friends is, and I've mentioned him to you, is Jim Tunney. He's number 32. He's known as the Dean of NFL Referees. He knows a lot about concussions, and he knows a lot about football. And we talk about this quite a bit because, you know, I'm actually working with him to put together his autobiography. And he's got some stories that just make you go, oh, my God, they didn't know that's what was wrong with him. But something you just said really kind of grabbed me, that the treatment for concussions is still fairly archaic and brain, you know, Not brain damage, but brain injury, because I know a couple of people with brain injury, and they're still struggling to get back, even after years. So what is being done to bring awareness to that, and what should people know? Because I think we've all had a concussion. I had a concussion when I was 4 from walking around in my mom's high heels. I fell right out of them and smacked my head on the tile floor. It hurt. And I still wear stilettos. So I learned nothing, just so you know. I love stilettos. But I've never forgotten that, because I remember they picked me up and rushed me to a hospital and said, "She's not right. There's something wrong. She's not right." And I wasn't. It's a good thing they did that.
Well, you know, there's been so many advances in the field of prevention. I mean, the NFL has done an incredible job. There's a wonderful woman, Jennifer, and she, I think her last name is Woodward, she's actually pioneered all of these prevention programs that the NFL is trying to do and conducting research on it. But still today, we don't have a treatment.
That's where I was going. Yeah. There is no treatment, which is amazing.
No. And also, I mean, with awareness and education, there's more and more parental support for knowing the signs of concussion. Many, many infamous people, famous people, have actually come out and advocated for it in recent years, ranging from all sports of all kinds. I mean, it's not just football. It's, you know, talk with Amy Wambach. She's on the board of Prevacus. She's soccer. But it can happen anywhere, anytime. It can happen with track. It can happen with baseball, dodgeball. Dodgeball, now called Gaga Ball, is a big, big generator of concussions, because they're kicking this ball around and they fall and hit their head. So, and as for the elderly, unfortunately, as we age, we have a greater propensity for falling. From the indications that I read with Robert Trump, he apparently had fallen several times, according to the news, whether, I don't know if it's fake or not, but in any event, there is a need. And so we hope to be able to provide the answer to that need in terms of a treatment, not a prevention, not a diagnostic tool, but a treatment. And the treatment, Prevacus, thanks to our great, great spokesperson and ambassador, Brett Favre, we're on a media blitz trying to create awareness of the solutions, the treatment, the prevention of concussions. We've even, you know, spoken with the White House about doing a summit. We haven't confirmed that yet, but that's our path. And it's, you know, it's not tied to whether, you know, it's a Republican or a Democratic president. That's a whole nother world issue. We're not really involved in. What we are involved in is the care of patients and the fact that they need a treatment. Whether you're in the military and being deployed and you're jumping out of a plane, or whether you're on the field of some sports event, or whether you're just walking around and fall, or in a motor vehicle accident. That's our goal, and we're going to push it forward as fast as we can with as much help as we can get.
What is Prevacus? You've mentioned it before, and I know we've talked about Brett Favre, but I don't know what Prevacus is, and what is pre-VPRO? Let's talk about those.
Okay. Prevacus is the company that is developed the first concussion drug called Prevacus. And Dr. Jake Van Landingham is the scientist who, together with Mike Lewandowski, a toxicologist, developed the formula and have put together all of the preclinical work and all the things that needed to go into bringing this drug to market. We put them in touch. I connected with the chief scientific officer of the neurology division of the FDA, and she was just wonderful. She said, "This is a breakthrough drug, Marcy." So we're getting ready to do our phase 1A and 1B in Australia, and that will be the first step towards getting this to market. Hopefully, I would like to clear it. I'm trying to see if I can find a way. You know, now with all of this COVID-19 devastation. We're starting to do things with Medicare and with the FDA that used to take 4 or 5 years or longer. Now, if it's done under what's called an emergency use authorization, you can clear it in a few months of time or 6 months or longer. But and Medicare will clear under the COVID-19 task force the reimbursement for it. So I'm trying to find a way to get this on in the market available as a treatment as soon as possible. At the very longest, two and a half years. At the very shortest, if I can actually convince someone at the FDA that there is an emergency with concussions in children and we need this, then I'm also going to pursue that path. I'm a clinical research organization under SpineMark as well to bring to market disruptive new products and devices and drugs.
Well, if anybody can do it, you can. I have faith.
Thank you. There are days when I need that, so I may call you.
Call me anytime. Seriously. And I am serious about that. You have my number. You can call me anytime you want. So what is pre-VPRO? I'm still confused about that.
Okay. PrevPro. Brett calls it PrevPro.
Okay.
PrevPro is a holistic, all-natural, botanical ingredient cream that Mike Lewandowski, our toxicologist, developed. And it's... we found in animal studies that it gets to the brain in 20 minutes, it peaks at 2 hours, and it stays there for 6 hours. What we know about this, and we can't make claims because it's not an FDA-approved product, but what we do know is that the ingredients that Mike chose are extremely supportive to the brain, very brain-friendly, high antioxidants. They reduce inflammation, they reduce swelling. And so we have positioned it as a cream you should apply to your neck twice a day, whether you're a child or adult. And if you happen to fall or you happen to be playing sports and you crash into someone, that the holistic botanical ingredients will be of value. Now, we will be continuing to do more clinical studies on this. We did safety studies with children using it before a football game, flag football, and then in between the quarters and then after. There were no adverse events. We have not assessed the cognitive functions. Do no harm. I mean, it doesn't hurt anything. And we'll be launching that in October, starting with online sales. For families and children and adults to be able to use. It's
and
just
I'm so
another
glad,
tool.
Well, anything that's botanical is good for me. And I'm glad you mentioned cognitive because, you know, Alzheimer's is a huge problem for so many people. And this is just, I am no doctor. I just observe and I read a lot. But it seems to me that many of us have inflammation all over our bodies, and that has to mean our brains from diet, lack of exercise, so many different things. I mean, you hear, oh, I'm in a fog right now. Well, you probably got a bunch of inflammation going on in your brain. Again, I'm no doctor. This is just me spouting. But I'm wondering if this would be good for people like me who just want to have better cognitive function.
Well, again, you know, we can't make claims, Denise.
I know.
But
I'm
for
asking,
me, for, but for me, I use it every day because it can't hurt me, and it's only going to help me in case something happens. So putting it on my neck 2 times a day, before in the morning or at night, I figure I'd rather be ahead of the odds than, you know, behind the times and sustain an injury that maybe I could have mitigated somehow.
Exactly. And I catch myself wondering, it sounds kind of like a miracle thing, but how would it impact sleep? If your brain is protected, you're not having, you know, undue, unneeded inflammation. I'm wondering if that would not help with sleep, because as anybody knows who hears me, I don't sleep much. I catnap, always have.
Well, you know, we haven't done the studies to look at that particular
aspect.
Let
me know when you do, because I'll be your first person. You can test me.
Well, I may just gift you a tube for you to try, because it's not going to hurt you, and you can tell me how it helped your sleep.
Oh, I will. Thank you. Okay, so, yeah, I would greatly appreciate that, because it seems to me that the more you protect your brain, however you're going to protect your brain, I mean, once your brain is gone, you've got nothing left, right? You may have a body, but you're really not there anymore, are you?
No, that's true. That's true.
Okay, well, I've beat this one to death. I'm massively curious about it, though, so keep me posted.
Absolutely.
So parents, listen, the only thing that I think most parents or most people who have read cheesy novels know about concussions is that you're supposed to not sleep, which leads me right back to sleeping.
You're supposed to stay awake, right?
Yeah, what is that all about, and is that actually true?
You know, I have heard the stories of that being recommended that as a treatment, but so I, you know, again, I'm not a doctor, so I can't speak to it, but it seems to me that if that's what patients are being told, and I think that's probably going back in time, I don't think that's what's happening now. I mean, when I had a family that had the child was hit in the head with Gaga ball from dodgeball, Gaga ball, and they took her immediately to the emergency room because they were concerned, did she have a concussion? And basically nothing has like that is being said anymore. I think that what they're encouraging them to is to, you know, take a low key activity, take care of yourself, rule out concussion. And now they have greater tools for ruling out concussions from a diagnostic point of view. But not telling a patient to just go in this dark room and not sleep is very, very, very archaic.
I always thought it was fairly cruel. It seems to me that if you
it
get
is,
smacked
true.
In the head, you want to take a nap and just wake up when it's over.
Right. Exactly. Totally. And,
I mean, that's me being a weenie, but yeah.
Well, and here's the really sad thing. I mean, one of our patient ambassadors, a wonderful woman named Allison Cook, and she's been a finalist in the Oregon Miss America and others. She was an avid volleyball player. She had 5 concussions that occurred from playing volleyball and getting hit. And she's now advocating for us and helping. But, you know, the times have changed. We don't have a treatment yet. But at least we're on the pathway to awareness because of people like Brett and, you know, Kurt Warner and Amy Wambach and everybody out there, the gentleman you're helping write his book, because people are coming forward. And, you know, even now the NFL has created a whole research division and studying films with Amazon on concussions. So it's a whole new world right now. And as I said, if we can just get through the phase 1A and 1B, we'll be expedited to the market. Or if I can convince someone at the FDA that because of the incidence that's rising in children, it's an emergency and we need to do it.
Exactly. So what do parents need to know? What do they need to be aware of and observe with their children?
Well, you know, most of the time when this happens, it happens in a either a school or a sports related function. So the most important thing is to observe, you know, their child and their behavior. Do they have a headache? Are they acting disoriented? Do they seem not psychologically sound? I mean, there's all kinds of motor tests and visual tests and things that need to be done. So the most important thing for a parent to know is if your child has fallen or had a head injury of any kind, go immediately to the doctor. Don't wait. Don't see if it's going to get worse. Just immediately go and have your child checked out by a professional, a physician, because unless you do and you're trying to second guess it, you may miss things, not from a lack of caring, but because you're not a doctor.
Oh, exactly. So, and that leads me next to, yeah, and I mentioned this earlier, protecting seniors when they fall. My mom passed away last year, and her final fall was the one that did her in. She had a brain bleed and passed away a couple of days later. Fortunately, she was not aware of any of it. Once she hit that floor, she was pretty much just gone. But
yeah,
let's talk about that, because seniors are terribly at risk, you know, brittle bones and, you know, just so many different things. How can we protect them before they fall or after they fall? I mean, what's some of your best advice?
Well, that's why we wanted to come out with this, with PrevPro, okay? Because, you know, once it occurs, you can't take it back. Now, we have some patients, a couple of them are elderly, that have had 6 concussions. And the
Ooh.
Doctors have told them, if you fall one more time, you're going to potentially lose your life or risk losing functions that are major to well-being. So the important thing to tell seniors is that, you know, I would strongly encourage seniors to try this cream, because if it can help you in terms of your stability and your neurological function, just because it's got some really great brain-friendly ingredients in it, so be it. But more importantly, the more that you're not falling, the better off you're going to be. And the second thing I would tell them is that's why I want to get Prevacus through, because you can't prevent these things. You maybe can give them something that mitigates them. But until we have a treatment, again, we're nowhere, Denise. That's why we need to get Prevacus on the market. And the beauty of Prevacus is it can be delivered anywhere. It's a transnasal delivery system that takes the powder, the drug, directly to the brain, and you get a 3-week supply when you go to the pharmacy to pick it up. Dr. Van Landingham was very, very diligent about making the cost of goods sold reasonable. His first formula was way too expensive. This cost approximately $300 for these treatments. But until we have a treatment for Prevacus, we can never get a handle on the long-term damaging effects of untreated concussions leading to post-concussion syndrome.
I'm taking all this in and just thinking, oh my gosh. I mean, my mom wound up having to leave her apartment, which just freaked her out. She'd been really independent all of her life. And my sister, God bless her, took a building that was on her property, stripped it and made a little one bedroom, one sit. But still, no matter what we did, what my sister did, my mom was still going to fall. She was weak. She was way underweight. You know, she mitigated whatever she could, no throw rugs, you get the idea,
right.
But she was always going to fall. And she finally did that one last time. So I understand that we need to be very, very, during our life, not just once we've gotten elderly, once we've gotten weak and frail and prone to falling, we need to start taking care of ourselves at all ages, good nutrition,
absolutely,
good supplements. So let's talk a bit about that. What can people do at whatever age they are now to start saying, I don't want to bend over and break my back. I don't want to twist my ankle and wind up, with a metal plate in there. What can I do now that is going to stand me in good stead as I age?
Well, I think the biggest factor in that is your exercise program. I mean, it doesn't stop when you become, as you grow older, it should get stronger. I mean, I'm on a mission to be able to be much better than I was when I was 20 or 30, because, I wasn't as smart maybe or as attuned as I am now to the need for mobility and strength and aerobic exercise and all of that. We take a lot of that for granted, in our younger ages, or at least I know I did, not everybody.
Oh,
has,
yeah.
But
we're bulletproof. I mean, we just know we're bulletproof. We can't get hurt.
Well, and I think, adopting these habits from early in life and carrying them through, to the later years when you are older. I'm not going to call you elderly because I hate that word. And
yeah.
I think that we just are older. We're not old, we're older. And so that's a big component of it. Nutrition is also a big component. How you eat, what you eat, when you eat. Sleep is huge.
I have a problem with sleep. I really do.
Yeah.
Although I've done this all of my life, so I don't see it as a problem. I've been this way since I was an infant. It's not that something changed, and I wouldn't even term it insomnia. I just sleep in fits and starts. But I get my most brilliant thoughts and work done in the wee hours of the morning when the world's asleep. So it happens to work for me. It's probably not a good idea, though.
Well, at some point, you have to catch up. You know what I mean? You have a super busy life with what you're doing and trying to help people by getting them introduced to people and opportunities and drugs and devices and all the things that you're held to the forefront of the American public and beyond. So, my only words of advice are the ones that I live by. I eat a very, very healthy diet. I don't eat sweets. I mean, I work out a lot. I do Pilates, which is great for, as you age, stretching and having flexibility, which is key in standing up and walking. Balance is huge.
Oh, very much so. Walking is my favorite thing. I love to go walk. I walk the dog. I walk without the dog. I will go outside and just do a circuit around the perimeter of my yard just for the heck of it. But I do have to watch that mole hole. I always fall in it. One day I'm going to break it. And I know the darn thing is there and he won't die. I keep trying to kill him, but he just laughs at me. But yeah, walking, I swear he pops up and goes, nah, you missed. But
you tried.
I keep trying. Bless his heart. I don't want to kill him. I just want him to move somewhere else. But yeah, walking.
That reminds me of the Groundhog Day movie.
Exactly.
With Bill Murray. Oh,
I
my God.
Just go away. I don't want to have to hurt you. Just leave. But yeah, walking, I think, is one of the best things you can do. And I just recently bought a QB. I don't know if anybody knows what a QB is, but it's a little...
I've heard of it.
Oh, I love it. It's underneath my desk. And it's like an elliptical, but it's underneath your desk. I love that thing. I mean, I can go hours, on and off all day long. And when I stand up, I feel like my thighs are stronger, my ankles are stronger. I just really enjoy it. So there's a plug for QB. CUBI. But I really enjoy it. And because I am at my desk so much, I have to find a way to make sure I'm moving. I have to, because I am known
absolutely.
to get caught up in web development. And 4 hours later, I'm like, I catch myself shallow breathing. I haven't moved. My back hurts. My butt hurts. Everything hurts. I've got to get up and go do something. And I think a lot of us do that. We sit too much.
Exactly. I stand all day, all night when I work. But, there's also problems with, if you're standing and you're more on one leg than you are on the other, you get to go walk around and you're going, what did I just do to myself? My right side is not coming.
Exactly. My left hip hurts all the time, I guess, because of the way I sit. You know what else I've been doing? Just because I've realized that I'm not standing as straight as I used to, because I'm always hunched over my monitor. So I've got these columns in my dining room, and about twice a day, I will go back up to one of these columns. And remember when we were a kid and your mom would say, okay, hold your head up straight. Push your spine back. I want to measure you. I pretend that my mom is still measuring me. Because
that's
I'm
awesome.
All from 5'7" and a half, that half is important, to 5'0" and a half. I just don't want to do that. So
right.
there's Sometimes you just have to kind of go back to the, you know, the things that you were taught by your mom.
The basics.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. They taught us those things for a reason. So NFL and concussions, that's a big, big, big deal. So when do you happen to know when they started really looking at concussions as a big deal, you know, in their sport, but for, you know, people in general?
Well, I think it goes back to probably, well, you remember when the movie came out, Concussion, with Will Smith, who played that,
no.
That was like 5 or 6 or 7 years ago, but that was the beginning of a lot of awareness. There were many, many indications, because players were having, especially retired, were having some very weird consequences from what we call CET, which Dr. Owaju diagnosed. He was the first person to bring attention to it. And of course, the first response from the world was, no, there's no such thing as a concussion and there's no such thing as CET. Well, we now know in this day, 2020, that that's not true. But I would say the NFL has been actively involved in this research for quite some time. They may not have spoken about it. They may have not acknowledged CET, but they set up prevention programs, and that's really to their credit, because they wanted to do something for the active players in particular. And they've also looked for a number of ways to help retired players deal with CET if, in fact, they have it.
Now, what is CET?
Oh, it's cerebral. I'll have to get you the exact wording for it, but it's what happens from too many hits to the brain and the head from, you know, some type of contact sports or activity or military, and it produces a malformation in the brain. And that's directly attributed to what the person has been doing. It happens a lot in military types of endeavors. The military has a crisis relative to traumatic brain injuries. And the goal is that you want to prevent the brain injury turning into a complication like CET. So, you know, that's where all this awareness really started, when that movie came out. And I'd encourage you to watch it, because it's very, very informative. I think it's still on demand somewhere. But it's a great movie, and it just shows how this doctor who found it had to fight the mainstream to prove that it existed. And it almost destroyed him and his life, but he prevailed.
I'm going to have to look that up. I'm not a person that watches movies. I just, honestly, if you don't catch me in the first 5 minutes, I've been known to leave the theater or go wash dishes if I'm at home. I'm not a movie person. But if I can learn something from a movie, then I'm good. So I will definitely go find that. What is the name of it again?
Concussion.
Concussion. Well, that's easy to remember. Okay, so I will definitely, I'll watch it and tell you what I take away from it.
Please do.
Okay. Oh, definitely. So, Marcy, you have a fascinating history and story. I actually, if you don't mind, I'd like to kind of delve into, you know, some of the things that you've done over the last couple of decades that got you where you are now, if you don't mind.
No, not at all.
Okay, start talking, because I find you fascinating.
All right, so I've told you about craniofacial and where that was. That was over 20 years, you know, of my life. And then the rest formulated in terms of, after going through that, you know, terrible divorce, I relocated to the West Coast, where I didn't know a soul. I was a file clerk at Children's Medical Center, because I didn't know what I wanted to do. So I started doing temp. But, you know, at the core of it was the realization that everything happens for a reason. I needed to heal from the divorce and start over. And so that's what I did. That's how I got started in LA. And all of the experiences in launching a new company and setting up programs led to fields of being involved in spine, orthopedics, neurosurgery, and interventional pain. And so I set up centers initially under my new company. When I moved to LA and then moved back to San Diego to help patients from all over the world, actually, with conditions that were terrorizing them, immobilizing them, destroying them with pain, chronic pain. And so that experience, because, you know, the children, there's one in 250,000 that would have a craniofacial deformity, but there's 1.8 billion people, according to the World Health Organization, disabled by back pain. So that became my new passion. And I knew that everything I had done in craniofacial needed to be done in the fields of neurospine and orthopedic spine. So that became what I sought to set up. I worked with all the device majority of the device companies, Medtronic, Synthes, and others in the field, helping them with reimbursement and customer training for their sales force about what to say and what not to say when trying to promote a product. And that's how all of this fast forwards to my work with concussions, because I've always at my core, I mean, people who from all walks of life have found me, and I don't know how, Denise, would call me and say, well, my child needs this, or I need to, Les Buck, a famous senior tennis player a couple of years ago, was being killed with scoliosis and back issues, and he couldn't play tennis anymore. So I did the research and I found three options for him. And he ended up going to Dr. Anand at Cedars. And 6 months later, he's standing upright. He looks 20 years older. He's swimming every day. He's going back. He's going to try and get back into tennis. He had a major front back operation. But, you know, it was life-changing. And so along the way, these people have, you know, from all areas have found me and needed help. And I guess through all the highs and lows of my career, that's been the one constant that kept me on the path, helping them. Didn't make a dollar from it, but I didn't need to. I didn't want to, you know. Even when I needed the money, I didn't want to.
Well, again, we go back to that dreaded term, servant leadership. People will find you. It's just dreaded to me. I don't know why. I probably need a psychologist to examine that. But, or, you know, Cracker Jacks or something. You know, maybe I'll just go get a toy out of a Cracker Jack. But here's
there
the thing.
You go.
I mean, I know. I'm like you. I don't eat sweet things either. I never did. And I don't like chocolate. Go figure. That's apropos of nothing. It just, you mentioned it. I thought I'll bring it up. But the thing is, people will find you when they need you. And if you're there and you're available and you're willing, your presence just grows, whether you understand it or not, or whether you're looking for it too. So, you know, there's a reason you're doing what you're doing, and there's a reason people find you, because I think you both need each other.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it hasn't been easy. You know, my life has been a series of lots of accomplishments and lots of loss. And you need the stamina and the accomplishments to keep you driving forward with the loss. And, you know, there were days where I didn't know how I was going to get through that day. And I just said, okay, it's easy, Marcy, one foot in front of the other, just get through that day and you'll be okay. And being that simplistic and having the spirituality of knowing that I would be okay, that, what I was doing was of value, and that no matter what the adversity was, I just had to keep moving forward.
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, I live my life largely the same way, but I've learned it's even a little bit easier than just get through this day. Sometimes it's just a matter of get through this next 15 minutes. Because whatever, you know, you'll wake up in a rotten mood. We all, right? We all do it. It's like, I think, you know, I don't want to do anything. I'm just going to be whiny and I'm going to be a titty baby all day long. After, I don't know about you, once I start whining and I do it out loud, I realize how ridiculous I am and how silly I sound. And I start, you know, just kind of laughing at myself. So I've gotten out of that 15 minutes and go into the next thing. And it can be just as easy as from moment to moment, from minute to minute, from day to day. But here's what I've learned in life. You're not, if you say you're going to have a bad day, you're probably going to have a bad day, but that's self-inflicted. But each day is made out of moments and adversity and strength and laughter. And it's in flux. We're in flux every moment that we're breathing. So that's what I'm hearing from you.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, it was so funny. I became very aware of signs in the universe, and not to be too esoteric here, but at the moments where I was struggling with, can I survive and can I make it, something would happen. A patient out of the blue would find me. And once you start getting, and she would start telling me this story, she had nowhere to go. She can't walk. She can't work. She can't get the prescriptions she needs. I mean, I was in Mississippi living for weeks on end, coming back to San Diego. Every one of the patients in that clinic had a personal connection to me. We'd see 17 or 18 a day with this wonderful neurosurgeon, Dr. Adam Lewis. And every one of them, I was in the room. I was the scribe. I was the gatekeeper. And after spending all day listening to these patients and the horror stories of how they lived, what happened to them in the course of their lives, how they were coping, you couldn't stay in a bad mood about yourself, and you had to kind of like just look in the mirror and go, snap out of it. You got to get to work here. These people need help.
Right. Get over yourself. Exactly. And right. Listen, I'm with you. I am constantly being reminded that I'm not alone. As much as I'm alone, when I tell you I'm a highly committed introvert, I'm not kidding. I mean, if I didn't ever have to come out of my house again, I probably wouldn't. Well, maybe I might come out of it.
but you come out of it to go get the mole.
Yeah. But the thing is, it's just I'm happiest when I'm off by myself. And I'm really happy when I'm getting to converse and you know, really learn from people like you. But you always show up in my life. Always, always, always. I'll be having a really crummy moment because I don't have bad days. I just don't allow it. And I'll be having a really kind of, smacking myself in the head and going, Denise, really? And then all of a sudden, here you come, or here Devin comes, or, you know, here comes somebody else that just, they want to chat with me. They need me. I can help them. They can help me. And all of a sudden, I'm lifted. I'm right back where I'm supposed to be.
Well, you know, you have to find opportunity in devastation, okay?
Yes.
And whether it's physical. So take, for instance, COVID-19, right? Horrible, horrible problem in our lives. Horrible devastation. Life as we know it is not as what it is today. But there is so much opportunity in it, Denise. So when they canceled elective surgery in February for 5 months, you know, all of my clients were medical device or pharmaceutical companies, and they weren't able to sell goods. So what do you think that did to me? And they all said, you know, we love you, but we're going to have to see where this goes. No problem. So I looked out there and I said, what am I going to do? And I realized that I had been working with medical suppliers 30 years. So maybe I could be of help in getting masks and gowns and gloves to the hospitals and the institutions and the individuals and the medical groups and the, you know, the procurement agents that needed it. So I reinvented myself in that world. And why? Number one, to raise funds for my consortium for Prevacus and PrevPro and all those drugs. And number two, to fill a need. Now, have I made any money in it? No, not really. But, you know, I'm on the cusp, and every penny I make is going to go towards bringing Prevacus and the PrevPro and the four other devices to market. But it gave me a new mission. Okay. And I just think we have to, as we roll along, we have to have the ability to keep reinventing ourselves, no matter
exactly.
what.
Exactly. Exactly. We have to adapt. And pivot is another word that I've gotten sick of very, very quickly. I don't think you need to pivot. I think you need to do as you did. Look around you, see where the need is, and adapt.
Right. Right.
So,
and you know, you can never be too old to adapt.
Oh, I agree. Look, I've seen people in their, you know, 90s who are doing remarkable things because they have taken, I wouldn't say it's a sum because they're still here, but they've taken their life experiences and now they're doing really kind of what they wanted to do in the first place. So,
right.
I mean, they just don't stop. Marcy, this has been a fascinating conversation, and I wasn't kidding. I find you absolutely fascinating. Before I let you go, where can people find you on the web?
I have a website, www.spinemark.com, and you can find me there. And also we have a website up on PrevPro, the cream for the children, adults, elderly, www.PrevProcream.com.
I'm heading there. Listen, thank you so much. It has been absolutely wonderful speaking with you. And I thank you for all the tips, the wonderful tips and advice that you've shared with our audience. So before we say goodbye, I would like to remind our audience to be sure to look for us on iTunes and honestly anywhere else you consume your business podcasts. You can find me iTunes, Google. I am now, I have to pet myself on the head, I am now on Amazon Prime Music. I don't know
That's
how it
awesome.
Happened. I know. I'm so proud of myself. I don't know how it happened, but there I am. Thank you. So
That's
anyway,
great.
Take us. I just found it by accident. Nobody even told me. I just went, oh, there I am. So anyway, look for your partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey. Marcy, thank you.
Thank you, Denise. Have a great
Get your voice heard. If you would like to launch your own far-reaching podcast, contact Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com and go to the podcast tab.